When large retailers, banks, credit agencies, and even the SEC get hacked, and your personal financial information is exposed, what should you do? Is there any sure way to protect yourself from identity theft? It's fairly impossible to remove yourself from online commerce, so how to keep important information secure and still engage in the convenience and efficiency of doing business online is our question as we discuss the risk associated with cyber transactions today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. The CEO of Equifax, Richard Smith, stepped down today. The Associated Press reports the company said Smith is retiring. It's not yet clear if the board will let him retain his $18 million in annual pay, bonuses, and other benefits. He was paid $15 million last year. We're talking today about the aftermath of data breaches like the one at Equifax that left 143 million Americans vulnerable to identity theft. Have you been victimized by identity theft, or are you worried about the risk but unsure of what to do? Give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Here to help us understand what it means when big companies get compromised and what you can do to keep yourself safe is Davin Williams. Davin is a consumer protection attorney with the State Department of Law. Hello, welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for being here today. She is in the studio. Davin is in the studio with me here in Anchorage. And on the line from Seattle is Chuck Harwood. Chuck is the regional director for the Federal Trade Commission. Chuck, thanks for being on with us today.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having us on, having me on.
So I'd like to start with you, Chuck. Richard Smith, the now former CEO of Equifax, is scheduled to testify on October 4th to the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Is the FTC involved in investigating Equifax?
Yes, actually, in a very rare situation, the FTC has actually confirmed that it's conducting an investigation related to the data breach. And that's unusual because typically at the FTC, we don't confirm investigations before we've actually made some sort of finding. But in this instance, given the circumstances and the media coverage and other things and consumer anxiety, we concluded we had to confirm we were actually investigating.
So why is it that you normally don't do that?
There are many times when we conclude the investigation doesn't warrant law enforcement action, and there's a danger that if we announce we're investigating and then don't take action, the company suffers adverse consequences in terms of reputation and things like that. And more specifically for me, there's a law that actually restricts when we can disclose our investigations. So
the fact that you have announced it, does that indicate the egregiousness of this data breach?
Certainly it does. Both the egregiousness and the level of public and legislative policymaking interest in the breach.
The Associated Press reports that Equifax was warned last March about a vulnerability and didn't install a fix, allowing hackers to grab information from May through July. Chuck, how much federal regulatory oversight is there on companies that deal with consumer financial data?
Well, that's an excellent question, and but the answer is very complicated. The way that the regulatory structure works is it's really regulation of this area is divided among multiple different agencies, both at the state and federal level. And so an entity like Equifax is subject to oversight by the Federal Trade Commission. With regard to the accuracy of its information and how it interacts with consumers, it's also subject to regulation by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau with regard to some of its data integrity practices and other practices. And there may well be other agencies at the federal level that look at it too, in addition to any criminal enforcement. In addition, there are state agencies that also oversee entities like Equifax.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing today the data breaches, the current data breaches that we've been reading about, seeing in the news, and we've also been doing some reporting on some of the state breaches that have happened. We'll be talking about that. Our guests today are Davin Williams, who is a consumer protection attorney with the Alaska Department of Law. She's in the studio. And Chuck Harwood, who is the regional director of the Federal Trade Commission. He's on the phone from Seattle. You can join us if you have questions or you've been exposed, had your information exposed and have suffered because of that, either had your identity stolen or had other complications trying to get credit, perhaps, or some other things. The numbers statewide are 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email your questions to talk@alaskapublic.org. What are the potential legal repercussions for Equifax and other companies and its top management? Can they be charged with some kind of financial negligence?
Well, there are, that's an excellent question also. And there are, in fact, there are many consequences. First, there for the hackers themselves, and of course, at this point, we don't know who actually did this, but the hackers themselves are facing criminal liability for basically hacking or intrusion. For the company, for Equifax, they could potentially face civil cases for failing to adequately protect consumers' information. They could be facing actions for damages caused by their misconduct, if in fact they did engage in misconduct. These could either be law enforcement type actions, or they could be class action suits filed by consumers or by businesses. And then they could also, those are the most obvious kinds of things. So both monetary and then you know, sort of various kinds of law enforcement actions.
Why does it, David, I want to get you in here in just a second, but I have one more question first for Chuck, and possibly, David, you could weigh in on this as well. Why does it take weeks, sometimes months or longer? Sometimes it was a hack that happened a year earlier. Why does it take so long for companies to alert consumers to these hacks? I think that is one of the big frustrations that people experience when they find out that a company knew months before and did not say anything. Why does that happen?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question also. And there sometimes it's deliberate because a company may want, if the hacker is still active, they may want to have a law enforcement agency or somebody help them try to identify who's engaging in the hacking, or they may want to get more information about the crime that's occurred, because there has been, it's a scene of a crime, obviously, and they want to investigate. But sometimes it's because they're trying to craft a response or a method of notifying consumers. But in most instances, and most states have some sort of a notification requirement, I'm not familiar with Alaska's, but I know most states there's a requirement that some notice has to be given within a reasonable period of time or relatively quickly. And of course, the question oftentimes is, when this much time passes, did the company act expeditiously in trying to provide that notice? And I don't think we know that yet.
David, did you want to add anything to that, or should we move on?
Yeah, Alaska has a law called the Alaska Personal Information Protection Act, and that law does require companies to provide notification to consumers when there is a data breach. And it does need to be done in fairly quickly and in a reasonable amount of time. As Chuck mentioned, there is some allowance for delays where the breach needs to be stopped, or perhaps there's some law enforcement investigation. But typically, it needs to be done quickly.
Is there what does that mean, quickly? I mean, that seems like there would be a lot of wiggle room there.
Well, it's you know, as soon as possible, as soon as they find out with some, I mean, it's sort of a case-by-case basis on whether the delay is reasonable or not. It just sort of depends on the breach, whether there's some kind of law enforcement investigation happening. So it can vary, but generally it needs to be done, in a quick amount of time.
Yeah. If I could just add one more thing,
sure,
I mean, that's
Chuck,
going to be one of the points of inquiry a state like Alaska or some other state will have when they talk with these companies. Why did it take you so long, and what were you doing during that period of time that you didn't provide notice? And if I were a business in these situations, obviously, you want to have an explanation. You want to be able to point to the law enforcement investigation or the other investigation you're actively engaging in before before you provided notice. But if you don't have that kind of explanation and you can't provide that reasonable notice, then conceivably, that reasonable explanation, then conceivably you're facing further liability for not notifying adequately.
So, David, what kind of teeth does the state authority have in that regard? Is it just companies that are actually physically in Alaska that this authority extends to, or is it larger entities like Equifax and others?
It extends to organizations that have information about Alaska consumers. Our office has had settlements with companies that are outside of Alaska where there have been large data breaches. One example would be the Target data breach that affected consumers all across the nation. And so Alaskans are increasingly affected by data breaches, and the Personal Information Protection Act would apply. It's whether or not our consumers are harmed, not necessarily where the business is located.
Okay. If you're just joining us, if you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing how to keep your data safe in light of lots of big data breaches that have been announced recently. We have in the studio Davin Williams. She's a consumer protection attorney with the Alaska Department of Law. And on the line from Seattle is Chuck Harwood. He's the regional director of the Federal Trade Commission. You can join our conversation if you have a question or a concern about how to keep yourself safe. We are going to get to some of those suggestions here. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We are going to go to the phones now. Jim is in McCarthy. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Did you have a question?
I want to know who did it. Who's the bank robber? They robbed the information, and who was it? And who's the suspects, and what are they doing about that?
Are you talking about Equifax in particular, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a lot of people. That's half the population almost.
Yeah. It's a lot of people. You're right.
143 million. Yeah. That Jim's exactly right. We all want to know who did it. And unfortunately, we don't know yet as far as at least public information. I can tell you, I've seen nothing that would suggest who's actually done it. We know a little bit about what happened. We know that they exploited a software flaw in a mobile platform to actually get in, but we don't know actually, at least among those of us who are on the public side, we don't know who did it yet. But certainly that's a critical piece of information. That's oftentimes what happens initially as soon as the breach occurs, is to get somebody like the FBI in to conduct an investigation immediately.
And is that happening? I mean, do you know that the FBI is involved in this now?
I don't know if the FBI is. I know I've seen Equifax statements where they explain that part of the delay in notifying consumers was because of law enforcement investigation, but I haven't seen the details of that beyond that.
All right, well, we're going to get to more calls in just a moment, but first, from both of you, what are your top recommendations for people to keep their own data safe? Davin, let's start with you. What do you recommend to Alaskans who are wondering what they should do? What do you do?
Well, there's different options available for people who believe that their information has been breached or just want to be proactive in protecting their information. Fraud alerts are an option. That's where you contact any of the credit bureaus and you place a 90-day fraud alert on your credit report. And then if a creditor was to try to access your credit report, if someone was applying for a loan using your information, they would pull your credit report and see that you had a fraud alert and request identification. Their Alaska law does allow for security freezes on credit reports. That requires contacting each of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, to place the freeze. Alaska law does allow the credit bureaus to charge a fee of $5, of up to $5 to place the fee. And when you put a security freeze on your credit report, you're typically given a PIN. And in order to apply for credit and allow somebody to access your credit report, you would have to temporarily remove the freeze. You may pay a fee of up to $2. Alaska law allows for that. Currently, Equifax has waived the fee through at least November 21st at this point. That date seems to be changing. So that's an option. Under Alaska law, you can also place that freeze on if you're a guardian or conservator, you can place that freeze on behalf of a vulnerable adult. You can also open a credit a parent of a minor who typically wouldn't have a credit report can request that a credit report be created for the purpose of freezing it to help prevent child identity theft.
Oh, interesting.
And then there's options for military service members. There's something called the active duty alert, where if a service member is deployed to somewhere other than their usual duty station, they can place a fraud alert, active duty alert, sorry, on their credit report that lets people know, if someone is using their information that they're actually they're deployed somewhere and they're not probably going to be applying for a loan. So
sure.
And so those are some of the options that people have.
Chuck, do you want to add to that list, or did David cover?
Yeah, I want to emphasize a couple of things. When previous caller asked about who did it, and I commented that there's a crime that's been committed. And in fact, that's exactly what's happened. There's been a crime that's been committed, but unlike most crimes where consumers are used to to somebody with a badge solving the crime, in this case, the consumers have a real role. They have to be proactive in responding to what's happened here, because the crime is ongoing in the sense that somebody now has their information and can continue to use it to defraud consumers, to engage in various illegal activities with that information. And so every consumer has a responsibility. This is not easy, but every consumer has a responsibility to try to lock down their information, protect themselves as much as they can in response to this kind of thing. And David's covered some of those things. You know, the credit freeze is an excellent option. Credit alerts are a great option. Those are simple to put on. They're essentially a 90-day notice that you believe you've been the victim. But I would say the first step is simply to make sure you get a copy of your credit files or credit reports and look at those carefully. Those can be done. There are a variety of ways to get those. If you believe you've been the victim of identity theft, you can get them for free. As we know, Equifax is offering them for free right now as part of their credit monitoring offer they're making to consumers. But the first step for any consumer should be at least one of those three reports that are their three credit reporting agencies, and take a look at that and look for suspicious information. And also look at all your bills as they come in. Keep watching them, because a lot of us have a tendency just to kind of toss those bills on the coffee table or something and maybe look at them at the end of the month. This is not the time to do that. This is the time to actually look at them as they come across your desk and see what's in there.
And I wanted to let Alaskans know that if you go to our website, alaskapublic.org, we have linked to some helpful information that Chuck Harwood with the FTC has sent to us. There's an identitytheft.gov link. Yep. There's some other links there that you can look at to get more information about what you can do to keep yourself safe. I want to ask some more about this idea of freezing credit and the fraud alerts, but let's go back to the phones for a moment. Celeste is in Anchorage. Hi, Celeste.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Did you have a question for our guests?
Actually, I was about to ask him the very same thing, to expand on the freezing credit and how I would go about it, because I did go on to Equifax and found that I am one of the people that was breached. So at this point, I am really kind of running scared.
Sure.
As to what I can do to protect myself.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's, I'm sure that Chuck and David would say that it's good that you were proactive enough to go look and see what had happened. And now what should her next steps be?
David, you want to?
David?
Yes. Well, you would need to contact each of the three credit bureaus, and they have options for calling on the phone, and they have options for accessing credit freezes through their website. So you can do it either online or by phone. Our website, www.law.alaska.gov, if you follow the consumer links, we have linked to we have provided the telephone numbers and linked to the websites where you can sign up for credit freezes.
Let me add a couple more things, if I may. First of all, I've talked to consumers who've tried to put freezes on, and most of them seem to have more luck if they can do it, doing it online than by phone, because I keep hearing stories about phone lines being tied up. So if you have the ability and can do that, try that option first for a freeze. But in the meantime, you can also just do a fraud alert, which is a short-term, quick thing to do that will cost you no money, and you can just that will at least let people know that you've been the victim, potentially been a victim, and will require anyone who receives an application that involves your credit report to at least verify that the person making the application is a genuine article and not somebody who's stolen the information. So there's that. And the other thing I want to mention is that with all of these offers, like the Equifax offer, it's important to distinguish between credit monitoring and a credit freeze. So Equifax has offered both. Credit monitoring is set up to let you know when there's been suspicious activity on your report, but that doesn't necessarily prevent people from getting access to your credit information. You need to go the next step and actually freeze your credit in order to avoid most people getting access to your credit.
One of the things that I wanted to ask about the fraud alert concept is sure. One of my credit cards said, you know, we'll do fraud alerts for you and we'll pull a fresh credit report every day to make sure that your credit looks okay. And something about that didn't sit well with me. I didn't do it because I thought, I don't know that I want somebody pulling a credit report every single day. Am I really off base there?
Well, that sounds a bit extreme, to be honest. Every day shouldn't be necessary.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I'm not sure what they're trying to accomplish there. It sounds like they're trying to make you think that somehow they're doing more than they probably can do or are doing. Mm-hmm. The pulling a credit report is part of monitoring. If you're doing the credit report, checking your credit reports, that's fine. It doesn't affect your credit rating. It doesn't look like somebody's applying for credit in your name. It doesn't change things. And hopefully that. You know, that works fine, but having somebody check it every day strikes me as just a little over the top.
I thought so too. That's why I didn't do it. All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Okay, let's go to, I guess we lost one caller. Let's go to Jeff in Anchorage. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I've been identified as someone exposed from the Equifax hack. And when I went online to sign up for their identity protection program, it had to be completed by them sending me a text to my cell phone. Why would I want to give them more information when they have not protected what information they already had? Can I sign up for the protection without providing them a cell number? In other words, through email.
Well, this is Chuck again, and the question you're asking is exactly the question I get asked many times every day. Why do I want to entrust additional information to a company that it appears didn't adequately protect my information already? And sadly, there's not a good answer for it. The simple matter is that the company still has an obligation to verify that the person they're doing business with is the person about whom they have the credit report. And so they have to do some sort of due diligence to make sure you're who you say you are. The kind of information they require from you and the verification information they require may vary from credit reporting agency to credit reporting agency, and you may have an option as to what kind of information you want to give them. So if you don't want to give them your cell number, there may be other options you can provide them, in part based on how you actually access the credit freeze options. If you do it by mail or by phone, you may get asked for different information than if you do it online. But you might explore other things, but you're probably going to have to in some way give them some information, as much as that may pain you to do so, simply to verify that they know that you're actually who you say you are.
Yeah, I don't mind giving them email address because, you know, everybody has that, but I try to keep my cell number private. And what about people that don't have cell phones as well? How do they sign up for this if they're required to receive a text through their cell phone to be identified?
Yeah. So in one sense, that kind of thing is actually, I can make an argument why this is good. That's something called two-factor authentication, where essentially they are trying to, hopefully they're setting up a process whereby you have both a password and a separate sort of a second piece to verify who you say you are and you get access. But I appreciate that those of us who have sort of limited communications options may be constrained in that regard. My experience has been that most of these companies will make allowances for that. If they can't use a cell number, they'll use a landline. They'll use some other means to verify, or as a last resort, they may have to correspond with you by mail. But they have mechanisms to work around these problems usually.
All right, Jeff, thanks so much for the call. David, I want to remind our listeners that if you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. We are talking about how to keep your data safe after the multitude of data breaches that we've been hearing about in recent months. And you can join our conversation by either emailing talk@alaskapublic.org or calling in statewide 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, or in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. David, security experts with a company called Cromtech found an unsecured database with information on nearly 600,000 Alaskans. What can you tell us about this? What happened and what was the response? This was some voter information?
I don't have any information to share about that particular incident today.
Okay. All right. Do you know if it's under investigation right now or what's happening with this case?
It's not something that I can probably discuss.
Okay. Okay. Sorry. I'm making her quite nervous now. So we'll move on from something else. Chuck, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, let me just, I don't know specifically about that investigation, but I think that when you talk about a data breach, it's useful to understand sort of what information was actually taken. And the reason that people are particularly concerned about the Equifax breach is because the kind of information that was stolen was the kind of information that can be used to engage in all kinds of financial crimes and frauds. It even includes driver's license information and other kinds of information like that. The kind of information is often used to verify identity and open accounts. So a breach involves relatively limited information about each individual may not be a big deal, although of course we don't like to see even that, and there's a crime that's been committed. A breach that involves a treasure trove of information like what we saw here with the Equifax case is truly a concerning situation.
All right, we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take more calls and questions as we discuss how to keep your data safe on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing identity theft, data breaches, and what you can do to keep yourself safe. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Bruce is in Juneau. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call, and thank you for putting this issue out there. I think it needs a lot of light, and it's really great Talk of Alaska is doing that. A couple, three things. It's really a complicated thing, or actually an important thing. First is, I have a question. Has there been an uptick in the number of identity thefts since Equifax breach occurred? And then a question about freezing your reports. What's to stop these nefarious individuals from pretending to be me and freezing before I freeze myself? And then the third thing is Congress really doing anything about this yet? Do we know?
Those are all really good questions, Bruce. Thanks so much. Chuck or... David, yeah, who wants start. Chuck, you want to start? Okay.
Yeah. Sure. It's too early to tell whether we've seen an increase in identity theft yet. The company is saying that they don't have evidence yet that any of the stolen information has been misused. So we don't know. And that's one of the nefarious aspects of any identity theft breach like this or data breach like this. The data can be, it can be stolen today, but it may not be used for a year from now. And so, and that for a consumer, that's especially worrisome because, you spend 3 months protecting yourself, and then you kind of let your guard down if you're not careful. And then, 9 months later, you find out you've been victimized. But it is too early right now to tell about whether there's been an uptick in data identity theft reports or not.
And do you think that when these things happen, when hacks and data breaches happen, is it sort of the MO of these hackers to purposely wait for a while so that, just as you said, people's guard is down after so many months, or they get the fraud alert thing for 3 months and then that falls away? Is that what usually happens, is that there is a pause before they actually start actively trying to mine for using your information?
I don't know. I can't get in the mind of identity thieves, but I've certainly heard that, that's what they may do. But I've also seen evidence of the information being used right away, within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So, and indeed, the FTC did an experiment a number of months ago where we released some bogus but relatively authentic-looking credit card numbers on what are called PACE sites that are used to traffic in stolen credit card information. And within a matter of hours, we saw evidence of people trying to use that information to purchase products and services.
Yikes. David, did you want to add something?
It's typically... It can be hard to tell if somebody has been exposed to multiple data breaches. It can be hard to tell where the ID theft came from, where the source of it was. And there are people who have had their information breached who do not report ID theft. And there are some cases, we've heard of cases where maybe information about W-2s was taken from an employer, and those employees were immediately contacting the IRS and finding out that people had already attempted to file for tax returns using their information. So I think if you found out that you've been breached in some way, whether it's personal information, financial information, healthcare information, it's best to be proactive quickly because you really don't know what the information will be used for, who's using it, how quickly they will use it. I think it's just safe to assume to always be proactive.
That sounds like such great advice, but I fear that a lot of people may have the mindset that I do. As I mentioned, I looked at, I went online, I looked at the credit card companies, they offered this fraud alert thing, pulling a fresh credit report every day. And I thought, no, that's not what I want. So then I'm back to agonizing over it and not doing something. Meanwhile, who knows what's happening? So I wonder about, because of the data breaches, what the level of trust in the system there is for folks and how they can be safely proactive in protecting themselves. We had a question by email about why should I have to pay for a credit freeze when the company is the one that compromised my data?
Well, Equifax is actually offering the free credit freeze
for
2 months. State law allows the credit bureaus to charge. Hmm. So...
Chuck, I want to go back to the phones here in just a second, but I want to get a quick question in about Equifax has offered a year of free protection against identity theft. That's what the Associated Press is reporting. Some lawmakers say it should be a decade. How is even a decade long enough when your Social Security number never changes? Even 30 years from now, it's going to be the same number. So how does this help?
I couldn't guess what the right number of years is. I mean, I guess I hope that in a decade we've developed better mechanisms for preventing, detecting, and detecting identity theft and blocking it from occurring. And maybe that's the best answer I can offer for why a decade is enough. But otherwise, you're correct. Our Social Security number follows us for life in most instances. And somebody who's 18 right now and is subject to this breach could be dealing with the consequences of it for years to come.
Do you think lawmakers will demand that this be a decade?
I mean, I know they're going to hold hearings, and I'm hoping that as part of that process, they'll look not just at what happened, you know, on July, whenever it was announced, in September and before that, but look at what's the consequences long term for consumers, 143 million consumers.
Yes. All right, let's go back to the phones. Larry is in Ketchikan. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a quick, well, it's not quick, but I have a question regarding how did these companies, there's three or four of these primary credit companies, how did they actually get my date of birth, Social Security, to create an account in my name? I never gave anybody permission for this.
And did you? Are you sure that you're part of the breach?
No, I'm not saying I'm not. But they all have my information because if a lending institution wants to find my credit, they go online and they put my data in. And these companies hold information on me, like Equifax. I'm not saying that I got breached, but it's a historical thing that they have this data. But I never gave any of these credit agencies my information or permission to have my information. But it dictates your life as a person who wants to go into the lending market.
That's a great question. Chuck, how does this happen? How do they get information? Is it from lending institutions, or where does it come from?
The truth is they get it from everywhere. They're essentially scraping all sorts of records, public records, records of businesses that you deal with, financial institutions. They're just collecting it from every source that, every reliable source they can find, and sadly sometimes it's not so reliable sources. In terms of the history of how we got to this situation where you had this kind of information being collected, it goes back many years to time when companies were trying to verify whether they wanted to make a loan or offer insurance to somebody, and they didn't. They were essentially asking the consumer's friends and neighbors, "Tell us about this person. Are they a reliable person?" Not the best way to do things, but that's what was happening. If we go back 60 or 80 years ago, and that became and grew into our current credit reporting system that has that whole process basically automated and being collected in these kind of huge databases. And I should note, in terms of how much Equifax has, they have about 12,000 times as much information or data as the Library of Congress does. So that's that gives you a sense of how much they've collected, just that one credit reporting agency.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of dismaying news to hear. Let's go back to the phones. Dave is in Palmer. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Hey, I've got a question. I'm 73. I don't have any loans. I own my own house. I pay cash for my card, so I don't really have a need for credit. And I'm planning to put a permanent freeze on all three agencies. Is there any disadvantage of doing that? I mean, will my household insurance, my car insurance folks, if I change car insurance, will they change my premiums because I don't have a available credit report? That's my question. Thank you.
It's a great question. Thanks, Dave.
Well, the freeze isn't really permanent. It can be lifted at any time. It can be temporarily lifted if someone needs access to it. It does create some inconvenience for people to put a freeze on their credit report because you do have to use a PIN every time you want it lifted temporarily to give somebody access. But it isn't necessarily a permanent lockdown on your credit report forever. You can still access it. You can still give people access. So if you know you're going to be applying for a loan or somebody's going to need access to your credit report, it's something you can provide.
Is it just a PIN number? I thought that I had read that if you put a freeze on your credit, that you need to send physical documentation to the credit rating agencies, that you're going to have to send a letter and some kind of verification of your documents, which seems actually kind of reasonable to me that it should be a bit cumbersome to get that freeze off your account. It's just a PIN number?
Well, for the temporary lifting, it can be a PIN, it can be a password, so it would be a combination of identification and some piece of information that they have issued, the credit bureau has issued to you to verify your identity for lifting it. But the process for applying might be more information that you need to provide, but then they will issue you that PIN to use.
David, Equifax faces numerous class action lawsuits. Is this something Alaska may participate in?
Well, we can't confirm or deny we have a state law that says we can't confirm or deny whether we're participating in any particular investigation. But certainly we have had enforcement actions involving credit breaches before, and it is something that the Department of Law is very interested in, as are, you know, every other state is interested in protecting their consumers from these types of events.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. You can join our conversation if you'd like. We're talking about how to keep your data safe in light of all these breaches that have happened. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-TALK. Or in Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We have David Williams, a consumer protection attorney from the Alaska Department of Law, in the studio here in Anchorage. And Chuck Harwood is the regional director of the Federal Trade Commission. He's on the phone from Seattle. Let's go back to the phones. Lorraine is in Anchorage. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask, when I went on to each of the three credit reporting agencies to put a freeze on my credit, Experian actually charged me $10, and I had thought that the attorney there that's with you at the top of the show had stated that Alaska law allowed for them to charge up to $5. So I wondered how they can be overcharging us and if anything can be done about that.
Well, if you think that the credit bureaus are overcharging, or you're having problems with this process, or you know, you're not getting the information you're supposed to be getting, you're not able to access things, things don't seem right, you can always file a complaint, a consumer complaint with our office.
Okay. Can we do that online? And if so, how?
Our complaint form is available on our website, which is www.law.alaska.gov, and you follow the consumer protection links.
Okay.
And we'll make sure and get that link on our website, as well as there's other links there with the posting for Talk of Alaska Today at alaskapublic.org. So we'll get that link up as well and provide a way for folks to get at some of this information. Let's stay with the phones for a moment and go to Dave, who is in Anchorage. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, not that I'm a whack job or a conspiracy theorist or anything, but I just thought I'd throw this out there. When Target and some of these other sort of recent pretty big data breaches happened, our credit card company just routinely issued new credit cards, which created all kinds of financial confusion. But can these things build up, you know, so like you do a Target data breach and you use that information to get into this Equifax thing. And meanwhile, we have certain high-ranking political folks claiming that there was all this voter fraud, double voting, and all that sort of stuff in this most recent election. The basic question is, does Equifax have enough information that whatever this criminal entity is can vote in my place before I go in? Like especially now that all the votes are counted digitally, not all, but, you know, we're going that direction from paper ballots. And everything's getting digital, is it possible that the information obtained can be used to create phantom votes in elections, and that would, you know, then show up as a double voting and be thrown out or discounted? Is that possible at all?
That's an interesting question. Damon, yeah. Chuck?
No, this is Chuck first. I honestly haven't thought about it, but it's a fascinating question. I agree. I'm not an expert on voter databases, so I honestly can't. I just don't know. I can tell you that a lot of the information Equifax has is financial information, which would not be useful in trying to engage in voter fraud. But there are obviously some things there that potentially somebody might be able to use. I just don't know whether that would be feasible. And it's useful to remember, of course, that every state's going to be different, even on their voter database.
David, do you want to add anything there? I mean, of course, they would have your home address. They would have a lot of that information that you would need if you were going to vote.
Various data breaches have different types of information that are obtained. Presumably, that information could be combined to be used for a lot of different purposes. I also can't really speak to the security of the voting system, I think. But I would assume that the elections people are aware that these types of things are happening and will, I'm sure, looking at solutions for, verifying identification. But I really can't speak to their controls
there. That is a very interesting question, though. Dave, thanks for the call. Let's stay with the phones. Paula is also in Anchorage. Hi, Paula.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I am also a victim of the Equifax breach, and I went in to put credit freezes on all three organizations. And I have read, and I don't know whether it's true or not, that they do not really want you to be putting a credit freeze on. They would prefer that you get their insurance for two reasons. The companies own a lot of those insurance that they're charging you for, so they're making money on that. And I've also read that they can't make money on you when you put a credit freeze on, and I'm wondering if that's true.
Well, they can charge for the credit freezes. The credit freezes are something that consumers are entitled to do because the law says you're allowed to do it. The law says you can put a freeze on your credit reports. The credit bureaus may offer other products to consumers that they are selling or perhaps in this case offering for free. And we can't endorse or comment really on whether consumers should be purchasing those products. And those are just monitoring, not necessarily protective. And so it's not really, the preference of the bureau. It's your preference as a consumer, because the law says you can do a fraud alert and the law says you can do a credit freeze. And so those are things that you can take advantage of regardless of the preference of the bureaus.
And you don't have to pay for those. You can just do that.
The fraud alert is free. Yeah.
What about the credit freezes?
You may be charged for that. Equifax is not charging for that at this point in time. The credit bureaus can sort of change their mind about that. But
Is there any role for state and federal government to get involved at this point and say, look, this mess was created because you ignored a vulnerability and did not put a fix in place? You need to step up now and take responsibility for this. And is there any regulatory leverage that state and federal governments have to kind of force this issue? Chuck?
Sure. So there have been other data breach cases where the entity that has held the data and it's been stolen has been required to take proactive steps to fix the problem, such as providing additional information to consumers, providing additional reassurance to consumers about the information that's been stolen. It's conceivable that in this case, and it's far too early to know where this would be the outcome, but conceivable in this case that an order, if there isn't actually a final court order involving Equifax, that court order would entail some sort of requirement that the company take some sort of proactive steps to better protect consumers in the future from the same sort of thing, or provide some kind of additional offer to consumers. But again, it's far too early to know, simply because we don't really know very much about what happened or where the liability should lie.
All right, I want to get to an email here that I think has some really good information. Patrick writes in and says, in addition to security freezes at the three credit bureaus, he said he also froze withdrawals from their 401k accounts. Right. He says that won't affect contributions or transfers, but will require a signature verification to rescind that freeze on withdrawals. You can apparently do the signature verification at most banks. Chuck, what can you tell us about this? This seems like a really good idea for people who are worried about their retirement accounts.
Well, I actually just recently heard about this as well, and I know that a number of reputable consumer advocacy organizations and groups are advocating that you look at your mutual fund security, whether it's your 401k plan or other investment, and try to determine whether that's secure. And the information I've seen suggests that the best first step to do that is to call your plan provider or your investment manager and ask them about their fraud protection policies and what steps they can offer you to help protect you. Because I gather that in each company it may vary somewhat according to what I've read. But I think that's a good step to take after you first check your credit report and dealt with your credit report piece. I think a good next step might be to take a look at your investments and see whether those are adequately protected as well.
And we did have another question, someone wanting to know if you have to do each individual credit rating agency. And yes, you do have to send separate alerts to each one of Experian. Right? Is that correct?
What can I comment on it? Yeah, so there's confusion here, and it's understandable. There's fraud alerts and freezes. So with a fraud alert, which you can actually engage and implement with any one of the three agencies, they're required to tell the other two agencies that a fraud alert should be placed on the consumer's report. So if you simply contact Experian, experian.com/fraud alert, and ask to put one on, that's sufficient for them, and they will then notify TransUnion and Equifax. For a freeze, as David has indicated, you have to contact each of the three credit reporting agencies separately.
Okay, so you can contact one for a fraud alert, and the other two will be notified. For a freeze, you have to individually contact each one of the three big credit rating agencies.
Correct.
So, Chuck, when you and I were talking in the days before the program today, you wrote that credit report agencies can only provide information to those with a valid need. But what exactly does that mean? I made a deposit the other day, and the teller, unprompted, said, hey, we ran your credit, and you're pre-approved for a car loan. How is that valid need? I haven't asked for a car loan. I was really taken aback by that. I thought, why are you running my credit report?
So yeah, that's a good question.
What is a valid need?
Well, if you are applying for credit, that is a valid need. And they're certainly authorized to pull a credit report on you. And the definition of what constitutes applying for credit is kind of broad, but it's not unlimited. You have to be undertaking some sort of a transaction that involves somebody giving you access to property or money of some kind. There's another kind of process whereby companies can ask to run collections of credit information on a group of consumers, and then all consumers who meet that specific set of requirements can then be offered credit. And those are called pre-screened credit offers. But the odd thing what you described was it sounded like it was sort of partially a pre-screened credit offer and partially specifically about you, which is troubling to hear. And it'd be interesting to know what they think you did to trigger their opportunity to actually check on that.
Yeah, I wasn't pleased about it, and I should have followed up. I just was kind of taken aback and left thinking, why did that happen?
Yeah. But by the way, can I just add, if consumers are concerned about the pre-screened credit offers, they can actually opt out of those. And there's information in the materials that we've been referring people to that describe how to opt out of pre-screened credit offers.
I think that I need to take that step because every now and then I get things in the mail that have checks in them that you can write out against your credit cards, which really infuriates me because if somebody picks that up out of the mail, wow, there you go. Home Depot, Target, now Equifax, it seems every day we hear of another compromise. Are we in sort of a post-consumer safety setting, especially with Social Security numbers? How can we ever rein this in now? I mean, what can we really do in the future? Chuck, you said potentially there may be more security measures in place in coming years. Is there anything on the horizon that you're encouraged by?
So, well, some of the things that we're seeing short-term are increasing use of what's called two-factor authentication, which is essentially the idea that when you sign on to something, you have to provide both a password and then a separate place. For example, your phone can be used to then they then make a phone call to you to verify that you're who you say you are. So short-term, that sort of thing, the two-factor authentication is useful. And by the way, any consumer should check into whether they can get that through their own their financial institutions, whatever, you ask about two-factor authentication. Further down the road, banks like and entities like USAA are looking at various kinds of biometric authentication, which essentially involves these fingerprints or voice prints. So again, there's that option coming in the future. We're also seeing evidence of reduced use of Social Security numbers in some instances. For example, next year, everybody's Medicare card will see the Social Security number go off their Medicare cards next year. So pulling back some of that information is a step. But I think long term, we really need to be proactive and take responsibility for protecting ourselves as well.
Let's go back to the phones quickly. Dan is in Cordova. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, here I am.
Yes. Did you have a question?
Can I hold these people liable that my broke? What if they go and they take the money out of the brokerage account? They hack into my bank, my savings account. Wherever I have money in the system, are they liable for giving my money to somebody else who isn't really, and how do I, process that?
Well, that's an excellent question. There are, in fact, class actions have been filed involving the breach itself. Entities that, like banks, that inadvertently pay out information in connection with a breach are probably required to restore that money to you by law. And you can start by simply complaining to the bank or by complaining to the bank's regulatory agency. The challenge with the mutual funds is they're actually not subject to the same kinds of requirements. That's why we were discussing earlier the need to make sure you lock that information down, and you may have to go to court to get to do something more than lock that information down and protect yourself.
All right. Thanks, Dan. You mentioned, Chuck, a few moments ago that the push or that there's a move toward using Social Security numbers less. When I first got my Social Security number many, many decades ago, my mom said, don't ever let anyone see this number. This is, private between you and the federal government, and no one should ever see this number. Now, there's a request to put that number on everything from, it's common for banks, obviously credit card companies, even your dentist wants you to put down your Social Security number on forms. So people do that, and then you're one disgruntled employee or hacker away from being compromised. What's the answer? Can you say to all these various entities, no, you're not going to get my Social Security number. This is my federal identification number. What's your right in that respect?
You, in fact, can question the need for Social Security numbers, and there are many instances where the company is simply using a form that has the number blank on it without actually contemplating why they're asking that information. Your dentist is a perfect example of that. If you're paying by credit card on the spot, there's no reason for them to be collecting your Social Security number, and you should say, why do you need this information? On the other hand, if it's a credit-granting situation, you may find that they're going to tell you that if you don't give us that number, we can't give you the credit you want. So, but it doesn't hurt to have that conversation up front and say, why do you need my number?
I just leave it off. I always leave it off. Thank you to my guest today, David Williams, a consumer protection attorney with the Alaska Department of Law, and Chuck Harwood, who is the regional director of the Federal Trade Commission. Remember, there's links to more information on our website, alaskapublic.org. So check that out and keep yourself safe. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.